You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello, and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 18th of January, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we are broadcasting live at RadioAryan.com today, because we have the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic victors of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise with us. Dennis, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. Man, does the time fly? Already 19th of the new year. Just flying.
Yeah, we're flying through January. It doesn't seem like just the other day we were wishing each other Happy New Year. We've had... What have we had? Three episodes? Maybe?
Who knows?
Two episodes, I think it is, that we've had. And what we're going to be doing today is actually part two of the one that we began the other week, where we were looking at this Australian curriculum that was... basically about power and authority in the modern world. And we got through... pretty much all of it, apart from the last section, which I think is probably going to be the most interesting section, where we're going to be looking at things like education, religion, movies and plays, employment, improvement in infrastructure, and the welfare system of the Third Reich. And obviously the kids, when they're being taught this at school, they're going to be told that, oh, the education was all brainwashing and employment. It was all people just preparing for war, and religion was getting rid of Christianity. So what we're going to be doing here today is presenting the alternative view, which obviously we believe is the more truthful view. And just before we begin, why would you say, just briefly, Dennis, why would you say that our views on this are more accurate than the views that are put across in the education system and in the mainstream?
Well, I mean, it's very hard to find true stories of National Socialism on the web these days. It's like if you don't know really where to go, you know, for genuine reports, what are backed up with sources and photographs, you know, then you really are struggling. What I found, even tonight, when I went through these, just what a wonderful place Germany really was. Now, some people will say, well, that's crazy. But from what I've seen and what I've noticed all backed up, it was an amazing place. And another, on the other side, they listed some books that have been written about Germany, which say the total opposite. And obviously, there's an agenda behind that side.
Well, and you've also, you know, you've heard from an eyewitness, you've heard from your own father about the Third Reich. And just looking now, as I was doing the research for this, I've been looking through books that were produced by the Third Reich for the American press before the war, explaining what was going on in Germany. So we're going back to the original source material, whereas these kids that are being taught at schools, they're being taught by Holocaust survivor grandchildren, basically. And the originals that were claiming to be witnesses, they've been discredited. And these people that are now repeating their lies, they weren't really talking to eyewitnesses. The eyewitnesses were discredited. And they also rely on history books that have been written since then, written very recently.
Wiki.
Yeah, they all go along with the lies that came out at Nuremberg. Because they all say, well, Nuremberg... basically stated that all of this was facts. Every one of these books is going to be repeating lies, because we know that what came out of Nuremberg was, you know, it was from torture, most of these confessions. There was a lot of lies, and they hid all the facts.
Yeah, well, interestingly enough, like I was looking about communism today, and they actually said that National Socialism has been demonized, whereas communism, when you're counting not just, you know, the Bolsheviks of World War II, but when you Pol Pot and Mao and all the others, and yet it's still accepted today as the most evil. Nazism is the most evil of all political doctrines. got to be a reason why, you know. I mean, this. I mean, communism has killed so many, and is still killing so many. But yeah, it's accepted. Amazing. And he quoted Nuremberg as well being one of the reasons, because obviously the victors had a Russian judge there, which gave him all this validity, if you like, you know, to say that they're not really that bad.
Well, I think there's two reasons, isn't there? One reason to put you off investigating National Socialism, and the second reason so that anyone that is a patriot or it goes anywhere near nationalism, they can say that leads to Nazism, that leads to 6 million Jews being gassed. So you've got two reasons there. Some of the Syrian nationalists are picking up on that second one, and they're saying that, you know, the kids don't study communism, they only study National Socialism because they want to draw links between National Socialism and nationalists today. So it's good that some of them are picking up on that. Gerard Batten, in particular, has picked up on that from UKIP.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's a shame that there's no statues to commemorate the gulags. There's plenty of commemorating the Holocaust.
Yeah, yeah. What went on there, and for how long it went on for, as well. I mean, that didn't really end until you know, a decade or so ago. This all just happened during the war, right? Well, let's get into this. Let's just repeat the letter that was sent in year 11 and 12. It has now become compulsory to study power and authority in the modern world as a core part of their education. Page 65 of the link I've sent you shows what is to be taught, including the Nazi ideology and the regime's impact in Germany on workers, youth, women, religion, culture, and minorities, including Jews. I might soon be tutoring a Christian young men's group, and if you and Dennis could discuss the bullet points of the Nazi regime to 1939, it would help me to instruct these teenage boys in this area of their history curriculum. And we got through that the week before last, and now we're going to look at the impact of the National Socialist regime on life in Germany, including cultural expression, religion, and workers. And the first one of these bullet points is education. And it's pretty hard to find details on what went on in the education sector. Obviously, I know a bit about it from having researched it before, but just trying to find quotes tonight was particularly hard. I found these two. A major part of biology became race science, and health education and physical training did not escape the racial stress. Geography became geopolitics, the study of the fatherland being fundamental. Physical training was made compulsory for all, as was the youth labour service. Much of the fundamental curriculum was not disturbed, however, and that came from the Encyclopedia Britannicum. In later education, I found in May 1933, books from university libraries which were deemed culturally destructive, so that was communist books, mainly due to anti-National Socialist or Jewish themes or authors, were burned by the German Students Association in town squares, e.g. in Berlin, and the curricula were subsequently modified. So what we can see from that is that they removed Marxism from the universities, and in the schools, they tried to make what the kids were studying relevant and make it about them. In biology, they were measuring each other's heads and learning about the differences between the ethnicities, studying their family trees, learning what Germans were best at, what Dutch were best at, what French were best at, learning about race so that they knew what were the best points of the German ethnicity and what they should be striving for and studying for and you know what they could be. And they applied this to everything, as it said there. Geography became geopolitics. So instead of learning, I mean, when I was at school, we learned about Brazil and the shanty towns. What was the point in that? What's that got to do with Britain? Nothing at all.
Yeah.
Nothing at all. So the Germans would be learning the history of the First War, everything that led up to that, the wars that Germany had been involved in. The religious wars, and everything was seen from a German viewpoint to give them a place in history so that they knew who they were. And I think, you know, so much effort was actually put into this because the children themselves were seen as the future, that they were the most precious possession that the nation had was the children. And everything that was done in the National Socialist State was for the benefit of them, because you would be building something for today and it would be for the children to benefit from tomorrow when the people building it today were retired. And I think that's the opposite way around to we do it today. Everything's done today.
I was just going to say that's the opposite. Yeah.
Yeah.
Live for today is the means. It's plunder what you can.
Yeah, live for today and don't worry about tomorrow. And we can see that they do that with the banking system as well. When they bailed out the banks, it was all the future generations that have to pay that back. And nobody seems to care that the price of the houses is going through the roof. They just say, oh, yeah, that's great. My house is worth more money now. But what about the next generation that can't afford them?
No, it's going to matter, man.
So
it was crazy system.
Yeah, and this played a big part in it. And also they were taught about Jews. They were taught about the destruction that the Jews had wrought in Germany. And they were taught to not fall for it, not fall for the temptation to engage in usury or engage in pornography, homosexuality, all the things that the Jews were encouraging. They were told it's Jews that are doing this, and it's not a natural Aryan spirit.
Does this sound like someone who's working for the Rothschilds?
No, it doesn't. Well, we'll get into the Rothschilds a little bit later on as well. We've got a bit on the Rothschilds. So I would say that was the important part about education is that it was so important to them. Today it's all about brainwashing. It's about trying to get all the kids to be politically correct and repeat the right things. Whereas the German way of looking at it was, we need to be producing the brightest and the best kids because they're going to be working for us. We've got it's like looking at a hunk of metal, and you know that you've got some gold in there. And they're saying, right, well, we've got to burn all this away and get it all down to the gold there. It may not look like gold at the moment, but eventually it will do.
Yeah.
And so that's
a good way of describing it. Whereas today, they know the gold were in there and not tell anybody, it shifted away and they get it themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Exactly.
And they had different forms of schooling as well. Like the really brightest kids, they went to exceptional schools and they were given all the resources and the best possible teachers. And this wasn't private schools that was paid for. This was paid for by the state, and yet they had exceptional tutors, and they would go on to join the SS, and that was the point of it. And this all started young with the Hitler Youth. They were taught the value of nation. They were taught to be patriots from a young age, and they knew they were a part of something. Kids today don't know that they're a part of their nation. They're told to feel guilty about their nation. They're not taught that they're part of a family of white nations, and everything that we've done since building the civilization in Europe and before. You know, they're just not taught that. They're just taught Holocaust, slavery.
Those who want to be taught, I mean, there's probably more just roaming the streets.
Well, I think this is a part of it as well, is making education interesting by basing it around them. See, if you give these kids a place of who they are and where they are, like, i.e. they're German, they're part of the German nation, and then you teach them all the great things that the Germans did in the past, they feel a part of something, it's interesting, and they want to learn more about it.
Yeah, I think it's like an exam where you'll get the question right if you know the date of a battle. But I think what the Germans did, they told you why that battle took place. There's a big difference.
Yeah. And involved the people in it. So they felt a part of it. Get them thinking for themselves. Why did this happen? Why did that happen? Look at this stab in the back that happened when we invited this ethnic minority, this foreign minority into our country and gave them the same rights as us. So they would learn from it.
And don't write us off.
It really was the best education system that we've had in the last century, in the last 100 years.
Well, it proved to be a great success because Germany just went for leaps and bounds in science and technology.
Yeah, and as you say, these kids were being taught to, because they were going to be the adults of tomorrow that were bringing in everything. So it wasn't just, let's concentrate our efforts on getting these guys back to work. It was, we need to get these guys back to work. We need to get the kids as highly educated as we possibly can. And we need to be really looking after the elderly as well, which we'll get into.
And who can criticise all that? Look, they do get criticised, obviously.
Well, it just shows you that what we're against is evil, isn't it? Because they went against this. They went against this.
They just portrayed them as evil.
They portrayed good as evil.
Yeah.
The next bullet point is religion. And I've got a small bit from Wiki, because if you look up religion on there or Christianity, you really do get a lot of negative propaganda, and a lot of it is mainly all of it just propaganda that can be disproved. I managed to pick this bit out. Positive Christianity rejected the Judaizing of Christianity and portrayed true Christianity as a fight against the Jews, with Jesus depicted as an Aryan. Positive Christianity was highly supported by the Nazi movement, which promoted its ideals in its journals Der Stürmer and Völkische Bierbachter, both of which stressed the Nordic character of Jesus. However, the party was careful to stress that positive Christianity was not intended to be a third confession, nor to contradict the traditional theologies of established churches. As early as 1920, the Nazis proclaimed in their 25-point program that the party as such advocates the standpoint of a positive Christianity without binding itself confessionally to any one denomination. It combats the Jewish materialistic spirit within and around us. And that's central to Christianity, I think. Central to the Bible is combating the Jewish materialistic spirit. Right from, you know, right from Genesis to Revelations, it's about combating materialism. Mm-hmm. I've got your quote after that from the Scriptorium, Dennis. Did you want to say anything before I went into that?
Well, you know yourself, I've had this battle with pagans for a long time. They're saying that what they're being told, they're repeating exactly what the Jews wanted to repeat. And the whole thing about World War II, it's not that I want to convert anybody, although I do believe there are some of them, they've mentioned they have been brought closer to Christ. But the fact is, it was a holy war, and there was a reason why it was a holy war. And if you don't recognise all those dead Christians on that battlefield of Europe were there for one reason only, to defend us from the Jews and communism, then you'll never, ever understand World War II.
I think respect for the truth comes into a lot of it. You know, I don't particularly care what religion people follow, but what I do care about is that they look for the truth and they have respect for the truth.
Yes,
and if you do have respect for the truth, you have to admit sometimes things that you may wish they weren't actually true, but you have to admit them.
That's true.
I think
that's fair play, isn't it? I mean, that's proper education. Well, what they're doing is saying total books built on lies.
You have to be honest about this, and it's character building to admit that you're wrong about things, rather than continue pretending that you're right and making stuff up and ignoring things and covering things over. You know, that's bad for you to do that. So I think that plays into it a lot. Okay, I've got a quote here from the Scriptorium. Adolf Hitler and many of his supporters were friendly to the Christian churches and their cause. The National Socialist Party program, officially published in February 1920, included a section on Christianity. Point 24 of the 25-point program stated, "We demand freedom for all religious denominations in the state so far as they are not a danger to it and do not militate against the customs and morality of the German folk. The party as such stands for positive Christianity, but does not bind itself in the matter of creed to any particular denomination. It fights the spirit of Jewish materialism within and outside of our ranks, and is convinced that our nation can achieve permanent health from within only on the principle common welfare comes before individual welfare." And I'll just interject there and say, well, that is love your neighbour as yourself. That's exactly what that is saying there. Common welfare comes before individual welfare. The statement was carefully crafted, reflecting the general National Socialist principle of non-interference in church matters, while refusing to endorse any particular Christian denomination or doctrinal perspective. It clearly endorsed positive Christianity and religious freedom. Churches in a National Socialist-dominated German state would be free to fulfil their missions, as long as they did not threaten civil order or national security or advance beliefs and causes that violated historic German ethics and morals. Certainly not all National Socialists shared this view. Within the party were two powerful forces, one represented by men like Alfred Rosenberg, who later became Reichsminister for the occupied eastern regions. He wanted to see Germany become an atheistic state. The other, represented by men like Hans Kerl, who later became Reichsminister for Church Affairs, endorsed Christianity. But it was Kerl, not Rosenberg, who was in the majority. In recognition of the party's partnership with churches in its effort to remake Germany, stormtroopers were required to attend worship services in their uniforms. I think that's pretty fair. There was a faction that were anti-Christian, but they were a minority.
Minority, yeah.
And it also points out here that if the church starts advancing beliefs that violate German ethics and morals, then they're not going to tolerate that church. And that's all the mainstream churches today. Violate traditional European ethics and morals.
Especially Francis, yeah.
Yeah, well, totally. I mean, look, they promote homosexuality. They say that's fine. Homosexual marriage, that's okay. Abortion, that's okay. Usury, that's okay. Race mixing, that's okay. All of these things are against Christian teaching and are defying Christian teaching as teaching that is comes directly from the Bible. That's based on the Bible, and anything that goes against that.
If anybody wants any proof that Francis is not a Christian, then there's your answer.
And when you look at it like that, you can see that Christianity does reflect traditional European ethics and morals, white people's ethics and morals. It's like we reflect Christianity, and Christianity also reflects us. Christendom could never have been built anywhere else but in Europe.
Well, the problem is now it's been so demonised in different ways that the youth of Europe now probably believe in flying saucers more than God. And that's another sign of that World War II being a holy war.
Right, it is constantly being mocked and ridiculed, and it's been made to be very uncool to say that you're a Christian. And really, people need to have the courage to stand out from the crowd. And if somebody is going to say, I'm a traditional Christian, and say that they go against everything that the majority is saying, really that shows they've got a lot of courage. And yet we're taught to just mock people like that. I remember when I was at school, you know, you mocked people that said that they were Christians, and that was quite some time ago.
Yeah, try it.
So... It's totally changed around from how things used to be, where the rebels used to be the ones that were hedonists and sexually immoral, and now the rebels are the ones that are traditionalists.
Yeah. It's true. It's completely turned around.
And it needed to turn around. Well, that's our bullet point on religion there. The next one is movies and plays. So it's really talking about entertainment and the entertainment that went on in the Third Reich. And I think you have to remember what went on before National Socialism as well in movies and plays. And the sort of plays.
Yeah, it starts to creep in, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, in your documentary, it says about this was one of the reasons why the Germans were so angry at the Jews was because of the plays that they were putting on and the movies that they were making.
Yeah, the first divorcee play was a Jewish play. They were just trying to. I mean, German culture was, you know, didn't want anything to do with that or any other kind of degeneracy. That's not the German way, but these things were being pushed into the German culture, which obviously caused a reaction.
There was a lot of promotion of trying to overturn the laws on homosexuality as well. And making out that it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, and he made a good point in their notes. He said, although they criticised in National Socialist Germany with homosexuals, tell me a country which didn't lock them up. Even Britain put them in prison.
Everywhere did at the time. It was this Magnus Hirschfeld and his sex institute. And I think he was something to do with the state. And when homosexuals were arrested, they were sent to him for him to deal with. And he would actually argue in court. And he was the main guy that was promoting the idea of changing the law. So the actual Weimar administration was linked with these perverts, and they were trying to overturn the law. And, you know, they didn't really succeed in doing that in Europe for another 50 or 60 years with the sexual revolution. But everything that we saw in America in the 60s was going on in Germany.
Yeah,
in the 30s.
Very slowly. Yeah.
So when the National Socialists took over, they turned all that around and they started making movies that were positive movies that weren't degenerate, and plays that weren't degenerate, and they had a lot of success. I can recall some of the ones I've seen. I've seen the one The Rothschilds, and you just think about that. They made a movie that exposed the banking conspiracy, a really well-made movie.
Yeah, really, really well-made. Said people said he worked for Rothschilds.
And the Jew Sus, which was about this famous Jew that basically did Jewing. A favourite theme of their films was exposing Jewish perfidy through history. The Eternal Jew they made as well. Occult Forces that showed the Masonic influence that led to the war. And just positive movies.
I mean, you just find out, you said you want to know about the country and you want to know about the enemies and what's good and what's bad. And that's what they did. They educated the population.
Through entertainment. So it was exciting and interesting and really well made. If you compare the German movies to Hollywood, you know, the German ones are better, I think. Or at least up to the same standard.
Huge resources, don't they? The bankers actually fund a lot of their movies. That's why they can lose 20 million on a film and not feel it.
I think at the time, I mean, now that we look at it, we think, well, Hollywood is they're the top movie makers. But back then, Germany and Hollywood were seen as top movie makers.
Yeah, I think a lot of the films they brought out recently are the poor standard, really, compared to even what Hollywood used to be. That's my feeling anyway, you know.
It's just you would think, well, it's a movie that's made in Europe. It can't have half as much money as the movies that are made in Hollywood. But back then, the effects and all the work that went into it doesn't look cheaply made. That's what I'm trying to say. It could have been made by Hollywood.
Yeah, well, there's a quote from Goebbels, actually, I can remember, because he said, when at first they were going to let all the Jews out of Germany, some people said, well, the film industry is never going to be as good again. And Goebbels said, you know, after a couple of years of the Germans handling it, you know, that was a myth. Look at the films we make today. Wonderful films. So proof was in the pudding.
Well, I think they basically bought out the people that invented the movie-making technology, didn't they? And the Jews just gradually took it over. But back at this time, they didn't have a complete hold on it. Germans had half the movie industry and the Jews had the other half in America. And then after the war, it was pretty much 95% Jewish. But at this point in time, it was German and American Jewish. So it was like competing between them. And the German films are better. They are much, much better. And I think when I look back and I look at 1950s films, they seem really dated and you just don't really get into them. But these German ones, you know, they grab your attention. It could just be the subject matter, because it's subject matter that we're interested in. But it just seems to me that they're much better made.
Well, they do that with everything, don't they? They have a high intensity in everything they do. So, you know, quality does come out at the other end. You know, in everything they do.
Yeah, they weren't done on a shoestring. They don't look like budget movies. Look at that Triumph of the Will as well.
Yeah.
I mean, they really
and the filming of the Olympics and all was first class, I mean, for that time, you know.
And then thinking about the colour filming that they did of Adolf Hitler, some of the film that you used in your documentary, Dennis, that was way ahead of its time. Yeah. The Blumenkrieg, the footage of that Blumenkrieg.
Yeah, all shipped over to America when they lost the war.
Well, what did the Americans do? They brought over a Jewish filmmaker, degenerate filmmaker, didn't they? That filmed basically a fake Holocaust, didn't he? Trying to think of the name of the guy.
Yeah, I think Hitchcock was involved with that as well.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the name himself. He used to work with the homosexual, what's she called? And she was in Germany and then left for America once before Hitler, just before Hitler came to power. They all jumped on a plane. Can't remember her name now. Oh, Marlene Dietrich. She worked with that producer you were thinking of, but I can't think of his name himself.
Yeah, it's it slips my mind at the moment. It's in the documentary, I think, either Buchenwald, A Dumb, Dumb Portrayal of Evil, or One Third of the Holocaust by Holocaust.
Yeah, I think it's in mine as well. I'll fill the greatest story. I think it's in that as well, but I can't remember his name.
Perhaps somebody in the chat room might know. They might. Billy Wilder.
Yeah.
Anglo Falcon says it's Billy Wilder. Well done. Thank you. Thank you, Anglo Falcon. Well, we've also got the plays as well that are part of this bullet point. And we've got a quote here. The Strength Through Joy program has taken four directions. One is that the pleasures of the theatre, the concert hall, and travel, even as far as Madeira, has been put in the reach of all at a very small expenditure by the individual. Last year, by means of the Strength Through Joy organization, 4,850,000 German work people attended the theatre. Travelling companies that go from village to village have been organised. The theatres have agreed to give certain special performances at cheap prices, and the whole movement has not only brought the theatre to every door, but has proved profitable for the theatres themselves. So you think 6 million Germans were brought back to work, and that's almost 5 million Germans went to the theatre.
So we win, isn't it?
Yeah, this was sponsored by the German state because they wanted people to understand German culture. You imagine if they had something like that today, and you know all the people that are on the dole, all the different, all the lower classes of white people, and they were encouraged to go along to the theatre and learn a bit of the rich British tradition that there is of the theatre. Something like Shakespeare or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
People just wouldn't understand it. They would they'd be confused by it. Yet Germany was in a position where they could do that.
It wasn't meant for the working classes, was it? Whereas over in Germany, you didn't really have a class system once Hitler took over.
You can imagine them sort of showing them opera, showing them theatre, and saying this isn't just the upper class's heritage, this is your heritage. You're a part of this.
Everybody,
as well.
Yeah.
And we want you to experience it, just so that you know what it's all about. I dare say
if you don't like it, but at least you know about it. Most people don't even know about it. So you get to learn to like it even.
So that people can be proud of their nation and proud of what they've achieved. I guess the closest we would have to it in Britain would be the last night at the proms. Something like that. That's a celebration of British heritage, patriotism.
For now,
and I think they do have cheap tickets for people that queue up. But it's not like the state says, "Here you go, all the people on the dole, you can have a free ticket to it." They'd be horrified at that.
It does help when the people in power don't particularly like nationalism anyway. So.
Well, the next one on the list here is employment. And as we know, they managed to get 6 million people back to work, which is no mean feat when you think the state that the country was in beforehand. And that wasn't because they were all working on war weaponry.
Military.
This was...
Roosevelt's
get out. Yeah. Again, they project what they've done, don't they? Like, Roosevelt projected that onto Germany, and what the Jews did in Soviet Russia, they projected that onto the Germans as well and said that the Germans did that in the Holocaust. All projection. Well, I've got another quote here from you, Dennis. It is forgotten that Hitler, as a youth and a young man, lived in great poverty, picking up casual labour in Vienna, and he had the inestimable advantage of studying international socialism and communism from the inside, a victim with an intelligent and critical mind. He found out two things in Vienna, one, that the class war leads nowhere, and the other, that the only people who made money out of the class war were the Jews. He himself, one of the workers and one of the victims, had long thought out his solution when he ordered his followers to take over the trade union organisations, to dismiss the official parasites and to organise in its place the Labour Front, which took over the liabilities of the old trade unions and secured for the old members the benefits for which they had paid the money, which had been squandered. Quite apart from National Socialism, the trade unions were rotten, they were bankrupt, and something had to be done in the interests of the working man. The central idea of the Labour Front is an organisation of industry, workshop by workshop, in which all those employed in production, including the employer and the employed, are in one organisation with the object of honest production for the good of the German people. "Your interests," said Hitler, "are not divided, they are the same. While you quarrel over the share of the payment for production, production itself ceases." He determined to replace the economic system of the 19th century, under which labour is bought as a ton of coal is bought, and the employer admits no responsibility to the worker, and the state has to intervene at every stage to protect his health and life, by the ideas permeating the old medieval guilds. Production was to become human instead of inhuman, and he did replace that. These idea of the Labour Front, that's similar to the corporations that Mussolini had in fascism, where they were working together, the workers and the employers, and they would collaborate together rather than competing together. And this idea of class war is a totally Marxism idea that just means that society is fighting against one another, and while we're distracted fighting against one another, they're making the money from it. And they're also telling the workers, "You're not getting paid enough, you should strike." And then they're telling the bosses, "You're paying them too much money, you should cut back on that money." Whereas if you just sit the people in a room together and say, "Look, you're all working on the same team," then you're going to get the best out of them. And plus with the nationalist idea as well, that everything that they're doing is for the good of the German people. They really wanted to be self-sufficient. So they wanted to be producing everything for themselves. They weren't interested in free trade like we are today. That they were interested in being proud of what you created for yourself. I mean, it's much better to say, "I created that." You have some pride in it.
It comes back to what you said earlier on, actually, because the building it for the future, obviously, you know, with the young in mind. So when you think about it, you know, there's no difference in a working guy looks at his son as a boss looks at his son. So if they're both on the same wavelength of producing for the future, it's a win-win.
And they also had massive building projects, building the roads, building the railways. You know, and then once you built the roads, you want everybody to have a car as well. So then they were working on the Volkswagen and Volkswagen Beetle and making it so that everybody could afford one. Because if you pay the workers more money, they're going to spend more money, and it's going to increase the economy. If you cut back on the wages that the workers have, they can't spend so much, which means the everything gets smaller. It doesn't grow. you need to have...
And everyone's miserable.
Yeah, you need to have people... You know, one of the ways they could have dealt with this bailing out the banks is instead of bailing out the banks was just to have given everybody a free load of money. And then people would have gone out and spent that, and that would have created demand, that would have paid for more things to be created. It might sound strange, but you have to have more. You have to have an increase in the excess capital that people have to spend in order to increase growth. Basically, if you keep cutting back on it all the time, then you get into a situation of permanent austerity. So what they wanted to do,
Britain's always done that, though, haven't they?
Yeah,
well, always said there's no money in the kitty.
Well, this was doing the opposite of it. This was saying we need to get as many people back to work as possible. Once they're at work, we need them to be earning as much money as possible, because then they will be able to spend that money. And when they spend that money, that will increase the wealth of the country as a whole, because instead of that money being put into savings, they'll think, well, it's okay, I don't need to save, my job is secure, the wages go up all the time, so I can spend that money. I can buy a car, I can buy a new house, I can buy this, I can buy that.
That's worry.
Yeah. And then the nation...
people are worried in this country.
Well, and also, don't forget, because the nation is self-sufficient, when they're spending this money, it's not going abroad, it's not going to Brazil or going to China, that money is going to another German company. So if it goes to that German company, it stays in Germany. So the wealth increases for the whole of Germany by doing that.
And that's what they didn't want the rest of the world to know what was going on.
Well, the rest of the world hated it, didn't they? The banks hated it because they'd been taken out of it. The middleman had been taken out of the deals that Germany was doing with other countries. They didn't need the central bankers. There was also the housing boom.
How evil.
Yeah, what about the housing boom?
Yeah. Where they could build.
Yeah, and for each child that you had 25% off the price of the house. So if you
Which
had four
is a
children,
brilliant
idea. So you had four children, you don't have to pay for a house.
And how many people in Britain are still struggling to pay for their houses? Totally different system.
Well, they encourage people in Britain not to have children. What's the point of that? The more the more a country like Germany has children, the wealthier it's going to become. The more a country has black children, the more into poverty that country is going to go, because they're not going to be able to create wealth for the country. They're just going to be a drain of wealth on the country.
Well, just, again, the proof is in the pudding, you know, which government cares about its people and which doesn't. It's pretty obvious to me.
Well, you can see the very fact that they fought down to the last child and last old person to defend Germany shows you how much they cared about Adolf Hitler. It didn't matter what the Allies did, they just couldn't break the Germans' faith in their Führer, because he was like a messiah to them.
They had seen the better side of life. That was the problem.
Yeah, they couldn't go back to anything else. Just the surroundings themselves were improved. I've got another quote here. Factory buildings were beautifully built to make people feel happy in work, unlike the ugly Victorian mills and their projections of misery. Conditions were improved not only by providing washing and bathing facilities and dining rooms, but by making the factories inside more pleasant places and turning waste ground outside into gardens, and even converting the hideous dumps into things pleasant to look at. Factories in this country are often pleasant places and well equipped. Bryant and Mays in East London is surrounded by gardens and tennis grounds for their employees, but it is only necessary to penetrate the industrial quarters of Manchester, of the Five Towns, of Birmingham, or of Glasgow to realise their appallingly dreary ugliness. And 50 million marks were actually spent on improving the factories since the Strength Through Joy movement was started, and prizes were also given for the most beautiful villages. That's a lot of money.
That's incredible.
a lot of money. They also had the Fresh Air Act, so they were guaranteed to get fresh air in their factories, and that was the first Fresh Air Act anywhere. They had paid holidays, limited working hours. A lot of things that actually the rest of the world after the war copied.
Put into action, yeah.
Yeah, because they couldn't get away with it any longer without actually making these improvements to the rest of the world, basically. Improvements in infrastructure, where we talked about the roads and the trains and the new towns that they were building. And one of the other things they tried to do was to cut back on transport, something they talk about a lot now, cut back on moving goods all the way around Europe. And what they said was, is if we've got an area with resources, those resources need to be processed in that area and, if possible, sold in that area. So that they don't have to be moved all around Germany. They don't have to move to one area to get processed and then off to another area to have something else done to it and then back to another area to get sold. We want it all in one area. And they built these towns on that basis. And again, that's also self-sufficiency. If you look at what happens today, we get stuff here in if you take the fishing industry, for instance, they'll catch fish in Britain, then that will go over to France to be processed, and then it will go over to Holland to be packaged, and then it will come back to Britain in frozen form to go in the supermarket. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
Which is just...
God knows what's in it every time it's come back.
Yeah, and it's a huge waste of money. It's a huge waste on the environment of all the travelling. And this was what they were trying to cut out by saying, look, if we've got resources somewhere, all the processing needs to be done in that one place, and we'll build a new town around that, and that will provide employment for the people. And the houses, every house had its own area for growing, so it could grow all its own greens and vegetables, because they were very much into having a good diet. You know, you've got to have a healthy body, mind and soul, and that starts with the body. If you've got families with new kids, they need to be fed the best food possible. So they need to have a big garden to grow food in, and they need to have a big area to practice sports in. Nothing like today's council houses.
Well, I mean, I said it right at the start of the programme that what a wonderful place Germany was to live. And if there was any doubts, I hope they're all being put to rest, because this is some kind of place to live.
Well, people might think it sounds like a bit of a utopia, really, but
yeah,
you know, these are the facts.
I said utopia lost in the documentary, didn't I? And I meant it.
Well, it is sad when you think what we've lost.
Well,
they didn't just look after the workers, though, as we're told today. Oh, they got rid of all the disabled, got rid of the elderly. They didn't do any of that. They looked after their people. I've got another quote here. Apart from the extreme poverty, which seems to haunt our modern civilization, especially in large cities, Germany has suffered terribly, not only from the war, but from the reparation payments, the occupation of the Ruhr, which under the incompetent socialist administration brought about the flight from the mark, ruining thousands of homes, and later on the appalling amount of unemployment. The National Socialist Party, as soon as they came into power, decided that the distress, especially in great cities, quite apart from government relief and work for the unemployed, required the personal touch of a voluntary association, and so with characteristic German thoroughness they proceeded to do it. In this, as in all other matters where the volunteer worker is wanted, the National Socialist organisation covering the whole country is, of course, invaluable. The aim of the National Socialist Welfare Society is the relief of persons who are physically and mentally sound, but who, in consequence of adverse general conditions, have fallen into a state of distress which threatens the health and development of both themselves and their dependents. In accordance with this principle of preserving the healthy part of the German nation, the National Socialist Welfare Society does not help those who are hereditarily diseased or suffering from incurable mental or physical diseases. These persons are cared for by the state. So the state looked after everybody, basically. But if you were German and you were struggling in some way, say you were a mother and you were struggling with the kids, or you were a father and you were struggling to bring the money in because you had debts, this welfare society would send people around to help you. So young nationalists would turn up. Young nationalist girls would turn up to help a mother who was having trouble with their children. They'd say, we'll look after your kids. Go and have a week's holiday at the women's retreat, where you can learn how to better manage your funds and better look after the home and all that sort of thing. And young lads would come out to help a father that was having problems getting the work done around his house. So like practical things. This welfare society was interested in, which, you know, it's a nationalist idea, isn't it? It's what...
yes, it's all for the good of the country, isn't it?
You know, you think about these drives to help the white homeless people, that sort of thing. Go out litter picking, looking after the country, all these sort of nationalist ideas that are for the benefit of everybody, basically.
Mm.
I mean, Golden Dawn are big on this. Amazing. Golden Dawn do a lot of this stuff, but that's what the welfare society was, but they also had state welfare. And before then, they'd only had church welfare. It was only the churches that were involved in it.
Charity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Germany was the first country to actually say, "Well, we'll have the state doing that, so that everybody doesn't just have to rely on the church."
Which is easier on the church as well, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it doesn't mean the church stopped doing it, but it just meant that everybody was even better off.
That's right.
And the rest of the world had to then do the same, which is why we have our welfare protections today, is because Germany did it. They were the first to do it. Continuing here.
They've been eroded.
It says, any person in Germany may be given relief by the National Socialist Welfare Society, whether he is employed or not. Special attention is paid to persons who are employed, but whose wages scarcely suffice to support their large families.
So there's nothing worse than working all week and having no money. That is worse sometimes than just being unemployed. That's just, it goes on a lot in this country, as you know. You know, you work for Tesco's for a pittance.
Well, they punish people that have large families here, and they try to encourage people not to have large families. But what they did in Germany was say, have the largest family you can, and if you are struggling, we'll send out some people to help you, who will be pleased to help you because they realise, you know, the great sacrifices you're making for our nation by producing all these children.
Well, once you're under all this, and just imagine Britain now, like, which has had all this, you know, recessions and non-stop recessions, and then a bit of a boom, then back in recession. Just imagine now if a government came in and said exactly what we've been saying tonight, and suddenly, you know, everything's turned around, and everyone's living in a, you know, far better society, more, you know, more people getting on with each other, and beautiful buildings to look at, all of it, what we said tonight, and then there's a war. You know, they're not going to give up easily, are they? What they've just got. It's human nature.
It was actually reading about the welfare stuff and the National Socialist Welfare State and all this stuff that really got me pro-National Socialism. Because there's a series of books. I think some of them are still on the NS Europa. And it actually talks about the welfare and the economy and all these things that aren't really anything to do with, you know, the racial side of it, but that basically say, you know, this is the way a state should be run, so that everybody benefits from it, the right way to do it. The National Socialist Welfare Society never distributes money as relief. Relief always takes the form of goods. In this way, any possibility of the relief being used for other purposes or unnecessary purchases is avoided. In order to increase the possibility of choice, increasing use has been made of vouchers for food, clothing, electricity, gas, and other necessities. So it prevented the money being spent on something it shouldn't be spent on.
Somewhere, yeah.
Yeah. And I guess it also increases production. Because all this stuff had to be produced to give to them, and the vouchers were for money, yeah. and the state would have paid for this money to whatever production company it was that was producing it all.
Yeah.
And if you look at today, just take housing benefits, for instance.
Spend your boost, could you?
Just take housing benefit, for instance. I mean, all the money that gets paid out in housing benefit, that all goes out to private landlords.
Yeah.
So it all gets siphoned away. Instead of being wealth for the state, wealth for the nation, it's just wealth for individual landlords.
True. I'd love to know what the tax rate was out there as well at that time. We'll have to look into that sometime.
Yeah, I think it was really low, from what I remember.
I can imagine it not being, yeah.
And that's if there even was any.
That's what I'm thinking.
I mean, we're used to taxes, but it's not something that's always been there. It might have been there once the war started. This welfare was all funded by voluntary contributions. Because
yeah.
If you think about it, there was none of the administration costs that we have now. We have all these administration costs now involved with this, where they're trying to check whether people are being honest, whether they're scamming the system. There was none of that.
Yeah.
They were just trusted to be honest. If they said they needed help, they were given help. You know, at least half of all the costs involved in the welfare system is involved in administration, and there would have been none involved in this.
Well, is that efficient? I mean, you know, they say about the national health struggling, the Germans would have run that to perfection, you know, they would.
Well, they're always efficient. We got Welfare for Women, the National Socialist Women's League. Its activities included instruction in the use of German manufactured products, such as butter and rayon, in place of the imported ones, as part of the self-sufficiency program, and classes for brides and schoolgirls. During wartime, it also provided refreshments at train stations, collected scrap metal and other materials, ran cookery and other classes, and allocated the domestic servants conscripted in the East to large families. As I say, no, they also allocated young women that would look after your children for a week and also provide the meals for your husband for the week, while these mothers could go off and have a break and have a holiday. Because it was seen that to be a housewife and a mother was a really, really important job. One of the most important jobs. So women were...
I've tried it once or twice.
Mothers were massively respected in Germany, not like the way they're demeaned today by the feminists. They did have welfare for the disabled, as they were just saying earlier, that the state paid for that. They were in asylums, the mentally disabled, physically disabled, were looked after by their families with help from the state. And the youth, the Hitler youth, as I said at the beginning, they were idolized as the reason for everything, since they would be the ones to inherit everything that was built today. And then we get to minorities. And that's the final bullet point.
This I found amazing.
Yeah, minorities. Why should the Germans be looking after anybody else but the Germans? And it's just accepted today that it's moral to be looking after somebody else. Why aren't these other people's people looking after them, if you see what I mean? Because the ethnic minorities, they weren't citizens.
Charity starts at home.
Yeah, charity starts at home. They weren't citizens. Only Germans could be citizens. They could expect protection under the law because they were guests, but they were excluded from having any influence on making the laws or from benefiting from any of the state welfare programs. They had their own Jewish charities. The Jews can look after the Jews. Why would ethnic minorities in Germany expect to be given the same rights and responsibilities as the Germans. It's not logical. It's just that today we're taught to think it's, you know, that's taken for granted.
Well, it's like in the Holocaust payments, all the Jews got it. I'm quite sure there were different ethics who died in World War II. There's only one section get them.
Yeah, there's only one section we ever hear about, but there weren't any blacks in Germany. This ethnic minorities bullet point, that is specifically to get the kids having pity for the Jews. It's so that they can just tell them all about the ways that the Jews were persecuted and try and get special status for them. Because what other minorities are they talking about? Homosexuals? Homosexuals were not a recognized minority. Homosexual activities were criminal, the same as everywhere else in Europe at the time. So that final bullet point on how did the Germans treat the ethnic minorities is just purely about getting the kids that are being taught to have special sympathies for the Jews and to give the Jews special status. And why should they be accorded any special status at all? Jews can look after the Jews. Are you still there, Dennis?
I'm still here, yeah. I'm just looking at... we missed out the thing about Paul, which I found interesting. After they invaded, after, you know, the 1939, they rebuilt part of Warsaw. And then after World War II, they intended to build really modern-style houses for everyone in Poland, including the German minorities, because they wanted them to feel like they were part of the Reich again.
So this wasn't just for the Germans. This was also for whites, basically. Whites from countries that have been occupied by Germany, and ex-communists, I would say as well, countries that have previously been occupied by communists.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So it's not like the last
big time, because they did build beautiful buildings, and then buildings would have gone eastward.
Well, that's a good answer to this. What about the ethnic minorities then, isn't it? Because you can say, well, look what they were going to do for these other ethnicities in their own countries. They were going to give them the same benefits that the German people had and build the same infrastructure for them. And that was the plan for the East,
was to bring
those countries.
They're not going to build a set of houses just for the Polish and build bigger houses for the Germans. They never thought like that, because all the buildings have to be of a certain standard.
And they were quite backward, weren't they? The ones in
the Poles were, yeah.
Anyway, we've gone a little bit over time here, Dennis, so we're going to have to finish. We did actually get all the way through it this time. Thank you very much for coming on. Yeah, thank you very much for coming on. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Friday with more Truth Without Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.